You know the vibe. Oh my god, my voice is going now too. You know the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast. Wow, it's been a long weekend. We are sponsored by NBA 2K25. It's myself, Mamuzi, alongside me, Mr. Christopher Thomas, NBA trainer. How are you doing, CT?
Here, we good. Let's go.
Oh, what a day in the NBA. First game, the number one seed Cleveland Cavaliers lost at home 121-112 against the Indiana Pacers. How about that, Indy, going out on the road and getting it done. Obviously the big story going into this was no Darius Garland for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and as the Pacers do, it was a very well-balanced attack. 17 for Nesmith, 17 for Siakam, 13 for Turner, 23 for Nembhard, 22 for Haliburton. Off the bench, you get 11 from Matthew Grant, 7 from McConnell, 7 from Obi Toppin. They've got depth, they've got speed, they've got pace, and they're not afraid to use it. What just off the bat jumped out to you about this game?
Everything. Like, total surprise of Pacers were ready and Cavs were not. Like,
too much time off?
Too much time off. You figure out your pro, like, I don't know. Like, it was odd. Thankfully for the Pacers, jumped on it, seized the moment, got it done. Here we go. Game two.
Yeah, it feels like Donovan Mitchell scores 30 points or more in every game when he plays. I think he's tied with Michael Jordan for the longest streak, right? However, 33 points on 30 shots in last night's game. He was 1 of 11 from 3, okay? And when you look at the distribution of the shots that the Cavs had, Donovan Mitchell and Ty Jerome, between them, just two players, took 50 shots. Jeez. Now, I might be cool with taking 50 shots if you're Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on the same team together. In fact, even then, I'm not. But Ty Jerome, respectfully, like, he had a great first series. He's had a great season. And you're trying to step up with no Darius Garland. But 50 shots for just two guys, that's a tough way to win a basketball game.
I'm cool with Michael Jordan taking 50 shots.
Mm.
Anybody else, anything else is desperation. It says, you're not ready for this moment. Mm. Which... why aren't you ready for this moment? You're the best team in the Eastern Conference. But
Should I tell you who is ready for the moment? Every year in the playoffs, Mr. Andrew Nembhard seems to raise his game. Andrew Nembhard shot 29% from three in the regular season. Tonight, he went 5 of 6 from downtown. If you look at the four playoff series that he's ever played in, right, he has shot 60%, 55%, 54%, and 49% from behind the arc. This man has an uncanny ability that when it's like he's got an auto lock aim, like in a video game, that when the playoffs begin, he can just turn it up a notch and it's just like a magnet in the ball, it's just going in. He was ready for the moment. And, you know, we talk a lot about the Pacers offense, right? Everyone always talks about the Pacers offense and it's high speed and they get out and run. But their defense tonight really rattled the Cavaliers, the ball pressure that they had. And Donovan Mitchell got up 33 shots, but he had to work hard to even get those shots up. And that's the difference. Whereas the Pacers offense was pretty comfortable. I didn't really see much resistance from the Cavs, especially in transition. And whenever Tyrese Haliburton scores more than 20 points, I think they've only lost like 3 games this season when he scores more than 20. So it's a good sign when that starts happening. The glimmer of hope, I guess, for the Cavs is you don't expect Donovan Mitchell to go 1 of 11 from 3. As a team, they shot 9 of 38 from behind the arc. That's good for 23.7%. You don't expect that to happen 3 more times in a series. However, like the Celtics, the Cavs are a team that rely on a large volume of three-point shots. I'm really looking in this series for Evan Mobley to step up. He had 20 and 10. He's a great young player, but with no Darius Garland, he's got to find a way to get more involved. Because the thing is, without Darius Garland, you're missing the self-creation scoring, but you're also missing the playmaking. Like, there are a lot of times Mobley and Allen, like the bigs are rolling to the hoop, but they're not catching the ball on the roll or even getting the lobs that they would have if Darius Garland was out there making those plays.
True.
So I want to see how they adjust to that, whether that's something they flag for the next game and make a point of emphasis to hit them on the rolls, or whether they kind of put the ball in Mobley's hands just a little bit more, because you can't have Ty Jerome taking more shots than Evan Mobley. Evan Mobley is an all-star caliber player, and he's taking 13 shots. He was 9 of 13. Good showing. However, the volume for him has got to be more.
Definitely in playoffs. Definitely he needs to be a focal point for their offense as much as he presents defense. Yeah. Everybody needs to understand step up in the playoffs, not step down and make sure you feel comfy in your roles. Like, no, you need to step up in these moments at this moment.
The other thing I like about the playoffs, right, is timing is so important in these games, because at the end of the third quarter, Miles Turner only hit 1-3 in the entire game, but the timing of that 1-3, he hit it as the buzzer sounded to give the Pacers a 92-90 lead going into the fourth. And even just having a 2-point advantage going into that final quarter of play can give your team a little psychological boost. And then, like, the Pacers didn't do a good job on the offensive rebounds. That's not their point of emphasis for them. They weren't offensive rebounding the basketball. However, was it Nesmith or Nembhard? I keep getting those two mixed up, right? But one of those guys had an offensive rebound, and Turner had an offensive rebound down the stretch. Crucial offensive rebounds down the stretch when the Pacers had a big lead and they were able to just run more and more time off the clock. And they just doubled up on their possessions. And so it's like the timing of these things is so important as well. Even though these guys aren't known for their offensive rebounding, even though Miles Turner wasn't scoring a lot of threes tonight, sometimes the timing and the flow and the rhythm of the game can be so integral into what accumulates to a win in the NBA playoffs. You know, yes. It's all well and good looking at the stat sheet afterwards and saying this and that, but it's really the timing and the momentum. But there was a stretch in that third quarter where the Cavs perimeter defense really stepped up. The Pacers went about 5 minutes without scoring the ball.
As they do, as they've done all season. And to your point, it's the timing of, you know, I won't say ineptitude, it's the timing of being put into a drought. Going to a drought, if it's can be devastating, or it just doesn't matter because the opponent is in the same mix. And the Pacers, fortunately, fell into a situation where they were afforded, the Cavs just were the Cavs tonight for whatever reason. They weren't the Cavs that showed all season they could score, they could hit threes, they could follow pace, set pace, that they could defend at a level at the rim or a perimeter. And the Pacers took advantage of that whichever way possible for them.
Mm. The Cavs, I think, in the regular season were 4-3 without Darius Garland. That 4-3 included two losses to the Indiana Pacers, interestingly. But how worried are you for Cleveland if Garland can't get back on the court for this series?
I'm more worried now that it shows something that they were so dominant in the Eastern Conference until this moment where it might be Garland is their notch, is their X factor, and they don't admit to it because they have so many pieces that contributed to their success that they didn't realize Garland is that dude. Tough.
I mean, Donovan Mitchell's a great player, but he's not a true point guard in the way that Garland is more of a, wants to look to facilitate a little bit more. But I want to just give some credit here to the player that was voted the most overrated player in the NBA, Mr. Tyrese Haliburton. And, you know, we've talked about what he does on offense, because the way that this man is so efficient, he had 13 assists and one turnover. And I think the turnover was right at the start of the game. So he had 13 assists with no turnovers, basically, right? But He stepped up big time on the defensive end. There was one play where he blocked Max Strus shooting a three, goes down, scores layup to stretch the lead to 10. Defensively, even on possessions where it doesn't end in a block or a steal, he massively improved that part of his game for tonight's showing. I don't know if he's going to do it for the whole series, but if he does play on the defensive end like that tonight, it's going to be hard. You know, we talked about the weak links in the defense. It's going to be pretty hard for that to happen.
No, he's all the difference for the Pacers. He's all the difference offensively if they score a 120 plus or if they break 90. Like he's all the difference if he just shows effort on the defensive end, which ignites. It's not that he was defensively aggressive all game. He was defensively aggressive enough where everybody else does what they do defensively. And then the Pacers look like a different team. Mm-hmm. They look like a team that for a long time, they're going to move past the series because they're taken lightly, because they're not considered real, a real team, a real contender.
And they were in the conference finals last year.
Yeah, and that part, like, you remember, we were here. You just didn't remember we were here. So,
Well, speaking of, you know, not taking opponents lightly, maybe the Houston Rockets shouldn't have taken the Golden State Warriors so lightly, as they lost Game 7 to Golden State. 103 to 89. Houston couldn't even crack 90 points in this one as the Golden State Warriors advanced to the next round. I think I called Warriors in 7 at the start of this series, or the start of the very start of the playoffs. And tonight just showed why. The experience shone through for the Warriors in a game in which Steph Curry had an absolutely horrible start to the game. I don't know how many points he scored in the first half. Maybe it was 0, maybe it was just like one bucket or something. But yet, we talked about this the other day, which role players would step up. It was Mr. Buddy Hield, 9 of 11 from downtown on his way to 33 points, tying the record for most three-pointers made in a Game 7. Buddy Hield, when he's scoring like that from behind the arc on that efficiency, because Steph is taking so much attention. So even though Steph's not scoring, it's leaving someone like Buddy Hield, who's been an elite three-point shooter his whole career, wide open. And then, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to start playing aggressive on Buddy Hield. Now Steph Curry's going to be wide open, or someone's going to be wide open. So this is just plays into the fact of the gravity that Steph Curry brings to this basketball team. But before we go through the game, there is one sequence that I've got to get your take on it. The 3 minutes, 33 seconds left. Rockets are down 10. There's a turnover. Fred Van Fleet is chasing back. And for some reason, he just pushed Jimmy Butler to the floor.
Hey.
I don't know if it's a frustration foul. I don't know what it is, but a clear path foul is 2 shots and a ball back. And that was the end of the game. I want to know what was going through his head in that situation.
And so do I, and so do we, and what? like what? It's just watching that was a moment of sit back, sit up, stand up as a fan. But being involved in the NBA, being involved in basketball is like, sit back, sit up, stand up. We're like, what? Like, unbelievable event that occurred from player to player. Like, just what? So, I don't know. I don't know. And I agree that definitely changed the course of the game.
Absolutely. It was a rough night for the Houston Rockets. Another rough night for Jalen Green. Fred wasn't able to score as much as he has in the previous games because the Warriors' defensive coverage on him, they weren't letting him get to those three-point pull-ups as much as they were before. They were doing a great job. They played a lot of possessions where, like, Draymond Green's dropping back and Pajemski did a great job of chasing over the screens. And, you know, they were just trying to limit the pull-up three attempts. He only attempted 6 threes tonight and went 3 of 6 from the field. The biggest difference in this game is the Rockets shooting 6 of 18 from downtown. and the Warriors making 18 of their 43 three-pointers. So the Warriors made as many three-pointers as you attempted. And I'm not one that's massive on analytics, but the maths on that, you're never going to win. I mean, we take 18 threes, make six of them. Yeah. You score 18 threes. Three is worth more than two. And
easy math. Easy math. And there's no reason for the Rockets to present tonight as is. There's all the reason that Golden State hit as many shots, made as many plays. Defensively, they weren't stalwart, but they did enough to make sure they're going to win this game.
I think they did a great job on Şengün. He scored 21 on 23 shots. And when you look at Şengün play throughout the series so far, it's like he will be really efficient at scoring when Draymond Green's not guarding him. But when Draymond Green is guarding him with his wingspan and his defensive acumen, he really makes Şengün struggle. But tonight, other players were stepping up as well. And they were really hesitant to like kind of bring those double teams to the post. They were living with straight up one-on-one play. The bright spot for the Houston Rockets was Amen Thompson. He had a stretch in the third quarter that really made it a game for a little bit there. Cut the lead right down. He finished with 24 points, 9 rebounds to go along with that as well. But, you know, for the Golden State Warriors, when Stephen Curry is not doing Stephen Curry things, and it's insane, like he had 22 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, right? Which is, for some players, the best stat line they'll ever have. For us, we're saying Steph Curry had a bad game. But when Steph Curry is not doing that, Jimmy Butler finished with 20 points. But Buddy Hield, that was the star. Who would have thought the star of Game 7 would be Buddy Hield?
Hey, good for him understanding the assignment and not putting onus on Steph. As I said, like Steph's been bothered this year, this series with the physicality, the scheme, and the concept of, all right, you're going to get yours, Steph, but you're going to trudge for yours. And that adds up over a 7-game series. This went 7. Someone else needed to step up. Buddy Hield, God love him. Like, we forgot this dude can actually ball.
He can shoot. I'll tell you that. He can shoot. Oh. He's a sniper. But the Houston Rockets got a lot of success in this series by going to their zone, in particular the double big zone. Tonight in Game 7, the Warriors spent a lot of time playing a zone defense, which they kind of dared the Houston Rockets to beat them from the perimeter rather than being able to get into the paint and score as they have been throughout this series. Why are we seeing so much more zone now in the NBA playoffs compared to the regular season?
I just think it's an easy way for coaches to mix it up because the traditional defense is we're manning up, we're switching, we're offering a fix for one-on-one, but zone is just, it's not traditional to NBA still. Now it's legal. And it just offers coaches a different scheme, different concept. I applaud it for the coaches that agree to it. It doesn't always work because I don't think players understand the concepts of zone, even though it's easier defense at that. So
I think it's easier to run zone in the playoffs because the game slows down. It's easier to get a half-court defense set up, whereas in the regular season, it's a lot of running up and down. Also, you know, you get a longer chance to scout individual teams when you're in a series with these guys. So you can come up with counters to a lot of the stuff that they want to do. And a lot of the offensive sets, you can't really run against the zone defense as you would against a man-to-man. But it worked really well for the Warriors tonight. It's like they pulled the Uno reverse card on the Houston Rockets. Said, if you're running a lot of zone, well, we can do it too. And the Houston half-court offense was terrible all season. It was not terrible, but it wasn't elite enough to be a 2-seed in the playoffs. But yeah, they ran into some serious problems tonight. They got some big decisions to make in this offseason. If I'm the Houston Rockets, I'm trying to get Mr. Giannis Antetokounmpo over there. And, you know, they've got some young pieces. They got some picks. That's what I'd be trying to do. But the Warriors advance to the second round where they'll play the Minnesota Timberwolves. And this is just the third time in NBA history that a 6-seed and a 7-seed are playing in the second round. I think the Lakers and Warriors did it in 2023. And then in 1987, it was the Supersonics against the Rockets in the 6-7 matchup. Both times, the seven seed won in six games. So we'll see if the Warriors can win this one in six. But before we talk about that, we've got to talk about tonight's games, because my Boston Celtics are starting their semifinal matchup with the New York Knicks. Now, a lot of people think this is going to be an easy win for the Celtics. I don't think it's going to be as easy as people think. I think you need to respect the New York Knicks more, because I've seen a lot of people say Celtics in five or whatever it might be. Not in a facetious way.
Bing bong.
Yeah, so we're looking at this series now. The New York Knicks went and got Karl-Anthony Towns in the summer with the idea in mind of beating Boston. Do you think they can pull this off?
I think the Knicks will pull this off only if the Celts they're damaged.
Hurt, injured.
Tatum's not 100%. Brown's not 100%. None of the
Drew Holiday's coming off
Holiday. Didn't play much the last series. Porzingis, you know, he keeps taking cuts. Like, they're damaged.
Yeah, so he had a rough series as well against Orlando.
That adds up. And, you know, the supporting cast behind all that is not compromised, but they're put on edge. They're pressured. And can you continue to hit shots, make plays, sustain while the ballers, your starting five, agree to just do what they do. So the Celts are in a little bit of trouble, if you call it that, when the Knicks they're rolling high. But, you know, Thibodeau is presenting the masterclass of, I'm playing my guys heavy, but my guys play heavy and they produce. And we're rolling through the playoffs.
I mean, they got a little scare in Detroit. They did have a little scare in Detroit. But
they did, but the fact is, he played guys heavy, and the guys, in particular, Brunson, who he went with, coming out of the locker room a couple times during the series, he just answers the bell.
It's not a question that Jalen Brunson is going to show up in this series. We know OG is an elite defender, and he's going to show up on the offensive side of the ball. My question mark, and I think the X factor for this series, is Josh Hart. Because in the regular season matchups, we saw the Celtics' defensive strategies to put their big on Josh Hart and just hope that he misses the threes, because then their big can stay as a low man that can come across and impact what Jalen Brunson's doing when he tries to get to the paint. And they can live with switches on, you know, if they put Jason Tatum on Karl-Anthony Towns, they can live with Tatum switching onto Brunson and so on and so forth. If Josh Hart starts hitting these shots when he's being left wide open, that changes the entire defensive strategy for the Celtics if we're going to base it on what's happened in previous matchups between these teams. So if he has his shot falling, I think that's the X factor for the New York Knicks. You know, we know the Celtics, how they're going to play on the offensive end, how they're going to shoot a lot of threes. We've got to see what the Knicks do in that one. Might see a little bit less of Mitchell Robinson if the Celtics are just playing five out every time down. You don't really need that kind of big presence. So it's going to be on Karl-Anthony Towns. I'm hoping Uncle Al can pull something out of the bag one more time. You know,
he's a couple. They need him for three games, the series, to do what he does, be what he's been. In three games, Celtics move on. If he, in particular, doesn't present his case as well as the supporting cast, they're in trouble. Because, the Knicks are riding high. They got the momentum going into the playoffs, going through the playoffs in particular. And then, you know, just doesn't seem until this point Tatum, Brown can figure out, let's superstar together. They still come off like the your turn, my turn.
I think the Celtics offense is kind of less conducive to that superstar duo Also, the fact that you've got two wings that are your superstars, like the same when you watch the Clippers, it's Harden, then it's Kawhi, then it's Harden, then it's Kawhi. And the same with the Lakers, it's Luka, then it's LeBron. And now I'm just listing teams that have been eliminated, so it's not doing well for my confidence. But we have seen it work all the way to a championship just 12 months ago, right? So it is proven that it does work. Because they, unlike the other guys I named, play defense as well. So that's working in their favor. The Celtics always roll out lineups with five guys that can defend at any time on the floor. There's no real weak links. I want to see how much they put Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns into pick and roll action and just relentlessly hunt either of those two guys, whether it's hunting Jalen Brunson off the switch or making Karl-Anthony Towns come out and guard on the perimeter. That's going to be the biggest weakness of the Knicks that you can exploit, is those two guys. Because OG, Hart, Bridges, great defenders. Cool. But Cat and Brunson, although they can try and do their best, they're not known as stand-up solid defenders, right? And then if you get Cat into foul trouble early, and then it all starts to go pear-shaped, because then Thibodeau is forced to use his bench. So I'm interested in that. What's your prediction for the series then, and how many games?
Jeez, tough. Celtics, because I feel they're the better team. They're up to prove their worth, as in defending. I want seven. Ooh. As a fan. I want seven for both teams to prove out, both teams' superstars to prove out and not leave any doubt to, man, Jalen Brunson is that dude. Mikal Bridges came up as that guy. You know, D. White showed out. Mm-hmm.
You know, when we did our bracket at the start of playoffs, BJ predicted the Celtics sweep this series in four games. Mm. That was his take. Mm. I said six, but, you know, given the injuries and stuff, I would not be shocked if the Knicks win here. I wouldn't be shocked. So we're going to have to see how game one pans out. The other game tomorrow or tonight, game one between the Denver Nuggets, fresh off a game seven victory, and the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's going to be a real tough game for Denver. That's going to be a real tough game. 48 hours after a game seven, now you've got to go up against the best team in the NBA. I think the OKC Thunder steamroll this game one. I would be shocked. I would actually be appalled at them if they don't.
All right. You know what? Just because it's expected, OKC's been lying in the wait. Just because OKC has been that team to prove their point all season, and just because Denver has not necessarily proven their point until this playoff run, I'm going to pick Denver. I'm going to pick Denver to go in there.
For game one or for the whole series?
And, well, for game one. Mm. To just go get it done and defeat the odds. And not to defeat the odds, but statement game.
It's the ultimate debate is really rest versus momentum. Which one are you going with? Fresh off a game seven win, mentally, you're on 100, right? You're up there, right, cool. We just took out Kawhi and his team in seven games. We can go up against anyone. Whereas OKC, they kind of been at home. It's given them more time to prepare, but there might be a little bit of rust. You know, the first few games of their first round series, we saw a little bit of rust for Shea when it came to shooting the basketball. I don't expect to see that again. What do we predict? Well, we predicted the Clippers were going to beat the Nuggets, so that shows how much we know. So I don't have an official prediction for this, but I think OKC take it in five.
Nuggets. They have the best player, even though Shea's a bad boy.
And you can win MVP.
Who can guard Joker when he's real?
This is why they went and got Hartenstein, but I don't think Hartenstein's going to do better than Zubac did, and Zubac still lost.
And Chet is going to have to fall off to that. No compare, you know. Now, there's no one for OKC to, all right, at the end of the day, we need to fix this problem. The problem is Joker.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that fix.
But having said that, ain't no one guarding SGA.
Yeah, true. But there's a scheme for SGA is get him comfy with his 30, but don't allow him to get his 8+ assists.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scheme for that. And then, you know, get others comfy defensively, as the Nuggets showed. Chase boys off the three. Just get them to not catch and shoot and be alternative shots end of game or end of shot clock. It might work for the Nuggets, but they're going to work for it.
Yeah.
They're not built for a 7-game series like that defensively, scheme wise, but 3 games, they can do it.
I think the X factor for me in this series has to be Jamal Murray, because OKC's roster is packed with guys that are absolute dogs on the perimeter. They can guard anyone in the league, then they can switch on anyone on the perimeter in the league, right? So it all depends, like we talked about the other day, which version of Jamal Murray shows up for the Denver Nuggets in this series, because those are some mean defenders they've got there in Oklahoma. They got the likes of Caruso, Casey Wallace, even Lou Dort. You know, I don't know how they're going to do their matchups, but their perimeter defense is stacked. So I think Denver can, we know what the Joker's going to bring, but Denver as a team can only go as far as Jamal Murray can take them.
Yeah. I always say for Denver, it's a light skin game. They got to show up. Straight. They got to show up, show out. They're going to be throwing up gang signs throughout the game.
It's also nice, Russell Westbrook returning. I don't want to say home because he's not from Oklahoma, but pretty much home because he spent the most of his career in OKC. That would be a pretty nice moment. I don't know if he's been back since, as in for a playoff matchup, since he left.
Now, you want Westbrook holding any type of inkling of a grudge for your team. So you create an instance, an issue for him. To just play off of at this point.
Absolutely. Man, I'm excited for it. That was a great night of basketball we had last night. And tomorrow night, we'll have more exciting basketball. So subscribe to the show, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast from. We'll be back tomorrow breaking down games one from the Knicks and the Celtics, the Nuggets and the Thunder. Subscribe, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. And until next time, get buckets.